My name is Cristiano Giuffrida. I come from the Vrije Universiteit in Amsterdam. People say it's really hard to finish a PhD in Amsterdam for reasons I never fully understand, but you know, that's what I'm doing there. And today I'm going to talk about Back to the Future, also known as our efforts into making live updates, which is the ability to update running software on the fly, fault tolerant, which is the ability to detect and automatically recover from failures at live update time. This is work with Kalin Jorgolescu here in the audience, Anton Kausten, and Andy Tannenbaum at the FU Amsterdam. So the problem we're trying to solve is very well understood by everybody here. So we have and projected actually into human beings directly on this slide. So we have our system and we want to keep our system essentially updated by installing patches continuously released by software vendors. But at the same time, we don't want to go down. So when updating user applications, we don't want to stop the applications and stopping whatever service the applications are providing to the clients. When patching, updating the operating system, we don't want to stop the operating system because that's a system reboot, resulting in significant downtime for both the operating system and all the applications running on top. This is very expensive for many classes of systems. So people have devised different solutions to deal with this particular problem. One solution is what we call spare time for downtime. This is a very popular solution. Essentially, install all your updates as part of planned maintenance cycles. Again, very popular, widespread out there, but it's particularly painful and also not affordable for many categories of systems that simply cannot tolerate any downtime at all. I mean, as an example, think of industrial control system or SCADA systems controlling around a power plant, for instance. Another solution is to rely on so-called rolling upgrades. Essentially, the idea is that you replicate your software installation across many different machines, many different nodes on many different machines, and you update one node at a time until you bump all the nodes globally to the new version. Again, another solution in widespread use, but it's only pain-free if you're dealing with systems that can tolerate state loss or, in general, can provide weak consistency guarantees on the global state of the system. If this is not the case, you can easily end up with different potentially incompatible system versions talking to each other and concurrently modifying a shared state in an inconsistent way, potentially leading to subtle semantic errors. One of which actually caused one of the biggest computer errors in banking history in 1994, as acknowledged on this slide. Another solution is what we call don't patch, don't tell. This is very, very simple. Just defer installing software updates or do not install updates at all. This is simple, but unfortunately also exposes, among other things, your system to security attacks. And given that the research shows that 75% of successful attacks actually exploit known vulnerabilities, this is probably not a great idea. Finally, our solution, live update, which essentially is the ability to update software on the fly while it's running with the promise of introducing no downtime, service disruption, or loss of critical program state. We can think of live update as an instance of the famous aphorism from David Wheeler: all problems in computer science can be solved by another level of indirection. So we can think of, you know, running piece of software as a reference to the running version of this piece of software. And if we can somehow bump this reference to point to the code and data of the new version, then we can effectively implement live update functionalities in a way that is transparent to the clients. But that will usually create another problem. So the other problem we have now is, first, how do we implement live update functionalities? And second, how do we make sure that the overall live update transaction is safe? So as it turns out, there are already systems solving the first problem, research and commercial solutions. The most notable example is probably K-Splice, recently acquired by Oracle and providing live update functionalities for the Linux kernel. It's already been deployed on more than 100,000 production systems and used to install more than 2 million live updates. The way it works is they take an existing patch for the Linux kernel, they turn it into a K-Splice compliant patch, and then you can feed this patch to their runtime system to patch a running kernel without a reboot. The way they do it is they momentarily pause the running kernel, they load the new code into memory, and they rely on binary rewriting to patch all the updated functions in place before resuming execution. So this strategy is very simple and very effective for small security patches, such as the one I'm showing right here. In this patch, we are actually patching a couple of functions in the Linux kernel to zero out cryptographic data before releasing the memory to the allocator, and thus fixing an important information disclosure vulnerability. Two things to note about this patch. One is it's very small. We're just changing a couple of lines of code in the kernel. Two, it doesn't have any side effects on the global state of the running kernel. This is different in this other patch, where we are artificially injecting many changes in a global data structure. Now, in live update terminology, for this patch to be applied on the fly, we need what's usually referred to as state transfer. So state transfer means transforming all your program state of the running system and all your data structures into a data structure and state format that is compatible and can be understood by the new code running the new version. So as it turns out, K-Splice and other live update solutions cannot deal with state transfer automatically. And in particular, changes like this are delegated completely to the programmer. So we need to do this manually. So next question is, can we do this better? In particular, what we want is a live update system that can support arbitrarily complex software updates, so not just small security patches. In addition, we want to support generic C programs found in the wild, both at the kernel level and at the user level, although I'll focus on user-level programs in the rest of this presentation. In addition, we want to automatically support state transfer, these transformations I showed you before, and also automatically validate the state of the updated program, so the updated program state. In particular, we're interested here in detecting arbitrary runtime and memory errors that can be introduced during the live update transformation in the live update code. And we want to be able to automatically recover from these failures using a feature which we term hot rollback, which essentially gives us the ability to automatically roll back all the failed live update attempts and resume execution safely in the old version. So to address all these challenges, we came up with what we call time-traveling state transfer, a new fault-tolerant technique based on three key principles. First, we rely on process-level updates. So in contrast to the K-Splice in-place live updating model, we essentially isolate all the program versions in independent process instances. And by doing so, we allow live update to happen from one process instance to another. So the process-based abstraction, in particular, gives us a couple of advantages here. One is it simplifies error detection. So it becomes trivial to detect runtime errors, such as crashes, for instance. And second, it drastically simplifies error isolation. So if we allow the live update and state transfer code to run completely sandboxed in the new process instance, say we have a memory error disrupting the state of the new program version, we can simply implement hot rollback, if we detect this error, of course, we can simply allow hot rollback to throw away the new process instance and go back, swapping in the old process instance to resume execution safely. Second, we rely on compiler-based program instrumentation to automatically generate a mapping function between the data structures in the old version and the data structures in the new version and perform automatic state transfer for us. Finally, we rely on the time-traveling idea to automatically perform state validation of the updated program. By time-traveling in this context, we refer to the ability to navigate through different program versions by means of state transfer. In particular, for our validation purposes, we allow a first forward state transfer transformation between the old version and the new version. And this is already sufficient to implement live update functionalities in the traditional way. But in addition, we allow a second redundant backward state transfer transformation between the new version and the old version again. And the idea is that the original program state of the old version and the final program state obtained in the overall transformation are identical by construction. So if we detect any differences between the two by means of state diffing, this means we can detect corruption that was induced by memory errors introduced in the transformation. And in this case, if we detect so, we simply reject the live update attempt and perform hot rollback operations. So this sounds complicated, but in practice, the interface we export, the sysadmin interface we export to the users is fairly simple. Say we want to live update my program from version 3.5 to version 3.6. All we had to do is you rely on the TTST CARL program provided by our framework, which essentially takes the binary containing the new version and the p.currently running process version. In response, our framework comes back with unloading the program in memory, and I'm automatically applying all your live update operations, validating the changes, and telling you the live update is completed without any additional user interaction. So let's see what happens behind the scene when we issue a live update comment. So the comment is actually received in the currently running version or past version from now on, as shown on the slide. This process instance contains the original program, but in an instrumented format, and all our support libraries transparently linked against the process by our instrumentation. In particular, the live update library implements traditional live update mechanisms, as also described in prior solutions. Our state transfer framework library remaps the state between one process instance into another, remapping all the data structures on the fly. And finally, the control library coordinates the entire process and performs state validation of the new version using our time traveling strategy. So in the first step, we load the new version from the binary in memory, and we create the future version, so containing the process running the new version. In the first step, we allow forward state transfer, as mentioned before, to remap the state between the past version and the future version. To do that, we give control to our support libraries in the future version so that the code can run completely sandboxed there. We perform state transfer in the state transfer framework library, and what we call control flow transfer, which essentially entails restarting all the application threads and resuming a consistent execution for the future version. At the end of this step, we're ready to go. The state of the future version is completely reconstructed from the past version, but we want to validate the state. So to do that, we allow a backward state transfer transaction run between the future version and what we call the reverse version, which is essentially a clone of the original past version. Again, we give control to our support libraries to perform first state transfer, control flow transfer, and finally just inform the past version that, okay, time traveling state transfer is finally completed. Now, the past version performs automatic state validation. In particular, it performs state diffing operations to diff its own program state with the state of the reverse version. And if no memory errors or differences are found in the process, we go back to the future version, we clean up all the other process instances, and we simply allow the future version to resume execution while telling the user, okay, live update is all done now. Now, this strategy raises two concerns. First is, how do we implement state transfer to automatically remap data structures across different process versions? And second, how do we implement state diffing to automatically validate the updated program state? So to solve the first issue, we rely on compiler-based instrumentation implemented using the LLVM compiler framework. Our instrumentation operates at link time and essentially takes the original program on the left side of the slide containing data and code and transforms the program into a statically instrumented program with data, instrumented code, our support libraries, and metadata information that describes essentially the entire program state. The metadata information contains, in particular, relocation and type information for all our data structures, and is given to us by LLVM and dumped into the final binary for the benefit of our state transfer framework at runtime. Relocation information is required for things like global, static variables, dynamically allocated objects to locate all our data structures in memory, and type information is actually required to introspect those data structures. So in particular, we rely on type information, which we match across version to detect things like type changes and apply all the type transformations on the fly. And at the same time, we rely on type information to locate all the pointers in memory. And this is critical, as you can imagine, because when recreating the state of the program version, of the new program version, we need to readjust all the pointers correctly to reflect the changes in the memory address space layout. So here's an example of the way our state transfer strategy operates. At the bottom of the slide, you see a global data structure with many different changes from the old version to the new version. And at the bottom, you see what happens when our state transfer framework needs to deal with this transformation. So you can see that all the type transformations are applied on the fly during state transfer. And things that happen automatically are, for instance, primitive type changes, or strings truncation, or swapping different struct fields, or dropping struct abstract fields, etc. It all happens automatically behind the scenes. And you can also see how the framework automatically remaps all the pointers for us, readjusting all the pointers in the new version in spite of type changes or, you know, any changes in the memory address space layout of the new process instance. Next question is, okay, how do we implement state diffing in a way that is simple enough to minimize the code required for the implementation? This is critical, of course, because state diffing is used for state validation purposes, and the code there has to be trusted to preserve the fault tolerance guarantees of our technique. So to address this challenge, we first instruct our framework to create a reverse version that has an exactly identical memory layout as the past version. Under this assumption, now doing state diffing, it becomes really, really simple. We just have to go through the proc file system, retrieve all the memory regions of the two process instances, and go region by region, memory page by memory page, and performing a simple mem compare. You can see an example of this on this slide. In this particular case, our differ came back with, okay, I found the two pages from two different memory regions that you can see in red in the slide have differences. In this case, the consequence will be simply initiating rollback operations, issuing a hot rollback to resume execution safely in the old version after detecting these differences. As it turns out, this strategy is really effective in drastically reducing the amount of trusted code part of our infrastructure. In particular, if we look at the total number of lines of code required to implement our infrastructure, we're looking at 26,000 lines of code. It's actually more than that in these days. And you can see how many of that are, of course, devoted to implementing the state transfer instrumentation and the framework, as expected. But if we look at the number of lines of code for the trusted components, this number is just around 1,700, which is below 7% of the total. We've also applied our techniques to 40 real updates, comprising around 40,000 lines of code on four server programs. In particular, we selected Apache HTTPD, Nginx VSFTPD, and OpenSSH, because we believe these programs to be particularly representative of open source programs found in the wild. Applying state transfer transformations, only the forward state transfer part, which is required by lab update, required us to write an extra 900 lines of code for these 40 real updates. This was necessary because we had to implement complex semantic transformations that could not be possibly automatically mapped by our framework. In addition, for our time traveling state transfer strategy, we had to write an extra of 300 lines of code to achieve full coverage backward state transfer. Note that this is not strictly necessary, but giving up on this extra effort would reduce the state validation surface enforced by our techniques. In addition, we noted in our evaluation our techniques basically incur negligible runtime overhead, thanks to our efficient state transfer instrumentation. And we've also observed modest virtual memory overhead between 2.6 and 4.3 times the original virtual memory size, and modest live update time between 0.1 and 1.2 seconds. But we believe these numbers can be drastically reduced with more engineering effort. So we've also evaluated the effectiveness of our fault tolerance mechanisms. In particular, we performed fault injection experiments by artificially injecting faults directly in the live update code and measuring the outcome of a live update between two different program versions. We focused in this experiment on four common programming errors and memory errors, branch errors, uninitialized memory reads, pointer errors, buffer overflows, and memory leakages, and reported the result of a live update in terms of successful update or live update aborted and rolled back after a timeout or detecting a normal termination, such as a crash, or state differences reported by our state diffing strategy. What you can see from the results is that different fault tolerance mechanisms are more or less effective depending on the classes of errors we are considering. For instance, abnormal termination seems to be only effective in the first three classes, or timeout is is particularly effective for branch errors, given that branch errors often lead to infinite loop errors in this case. And also what we observe is that our state diffing strategy was particularly effective all across the different classes of memory errors. We were particularly impressed by its effectiveness for buffer overflows. We were able to recover by 95% of the failures, in which case it's all the other fault tolerance mechanisms couldn't basically detect any failure at all. To conclude, I presented time traveling state transfer. It's a new fault tolerant live update technique. I tried to show you how we can effectively support several classes of updates with minimal manual effort. In particular, we can automate state transfer transformations and automatically validate the state of the updated program. In this work, we focus on detecting and recovering from arbitrary runtime and memory errors. And I tried to show you how our fault-tolerant design actually relies on a minimal amount of trusted code. What I want to show you now, I hope we have enough time. OK, great. I want to show you a little demo of the way our techniques actually operate in practice. In this demo, we're going to live update Nginx, a popular web server, from version 0.8.54 to version 0.9.2. First thing we're going to do is enter the installation directory and use our custom start script to start the server, which basically starts the server but also enables live update capabilities, as you can see from the debug output here. We now open a new terminal and issue a persistent connection to the server on port 1080. And we issue a simple request for the welcome page. So you may notice in this simple request that the if modified since header. Now, in the currently running version 0.8.50, this header is not supported. So the semantic of this header is only return the page if it never changed since 1994, as shown in the example here. So in this case, in the currently running version, the header is not supported, and the server simply comes back with, OK, I'm returning the welcome page, although it shouldn't return the welcome page because it never changed since 1994. Now we go back to the other terminal, and we try to issue a live update since the new version is actually supporting the new HTTP header. So in our first attempt, we're actually going to use our ST cattle live update tool. We're going to specify the new binary, the new version, 0.9.2, and the PID of the currently running version. But we're also going to specify the fault injection flag, which essentially instructs our framework to perform fault injection experiments while performing live updates. So as you can see, the framework comes back with, I'm trying to apply changes, but sorry, live update failed with error 10, which is crash in this case, rolling back. And at the end of the process, it tells us, OK, hot rollback is all done, in spite of the failure. We go back to the other terminal, and as you can see, the connection is still live and kicking. We issue another request, and as expected, we're still running safely the old version with the same output, essentially. Still header, HTTP header not supported. We go back to the other terminal. Let's try to issue a live update operation once again, but without a fault injection flag this time. So what happens now is that the framework comes back. It says, I'm applying the changes, I'm validating the changes, cleaning up the old version, live update all done. Let's go back to the other terminal now. And what we see is that the connection is still alive. Now we try to issue the identical request, again, for the welcome page. And the server comes back, and it says, hey, I'm Nginx version 0.9.2. And by the way, precondition failed, because now we have a new feature that can tell us that the welcome page shouldn't be returned at all. All right, so what you saw in this demo is that the persistent connection to the server was live updated along with the server using state transfer to the new version. So it was teleported to the new version without any kind of failure or error code or connection lost error whatsoever returned to the user. So this is different, for instance, from different classes of live updates. For instance, in more recent versions of Nginx, they actually implemented some update capabilities, but did so by running the old version and new version in parallel. This is simple and similar to rolling upgrades, might work well for Nginx, but our techniques in turn are more general and can support atomic and stateful live update for broad classes of applications without making any assumption on the structure of the operation or relying on a doc solution on a per application basis. So this also concludes my presentation. I'm happy to take questions. And if you want to know more about our work, you'll find us in the Hackspace in the next 1 hour or so. Thank you.
So hopefully this is quick, and if you address this and I missed it, my bad. But what happens to the state of the runtime stack during the versioning?
Right. So you mean during the live update?
Yeah. Like, let's say there's something on the runtime stack, like, and some types of the parameters switch and change sizes. Are you resilient against that?
Right. So yeah, we can talk offline for the details, but basically for the runtime stack, mm-hmm. we actually have, so we don't address this in this particular paper, but in our other paper, in our ongoing work, what we do is offline profiling to determine the long-lived regions of the stack, because those have essentially state that makes sense. The rest we just throw away, and we just make sense that the application is in a safe state where the short-term part of the stack is not there to begin with. And we only need to perform state transfer like we do for global variables, say, and dynamically allocated objects, only for the long-lived regions of the stack. So we treat those as global variables. Think of the long-lived part of the stack as, you know, global variables, and we treat them actually uniformly in our framework.
Oh, very nice.
So I have two questions.
Sure.
One, how does your solution deal with runtime data changes? If I'm understanding what you're doing here correctly, after the state transfer is complete and your new version is running, it's a new process. You've created a new process
right.
for this, so it's got a new PID.
Right.
So what if, for example, inside your process memory, you've got the PID stored in memory because it's comparing it to something, and then in the new state, you need to update that PID to something else. Is it capable of handling that?
Right. So yeah, for these kinds of changes, I mean, so there's different answers to this question. So my first answer is we actually rely on Linux namespaces, which essentially is PID virtualization. So you can run your application in a container, so no problem at all. You're, you know, always in your container, so the first version is also in a container, and you get the same PID namespace, no
okay.
problem. You have to deal with non-determinism for the process hierarchy and that, but our framework actually deals with that, so we can actually assign PIDs automatically from the framework. So if we see that the first process was PID 1, we give it PID 1, et cetera, and reconstruct the process hierarchy. But this is actually a more general problem, so you can shift the problem from PIDs to TIDs, for instance, right? Or you can shift it to SMEM IDs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So my answer to that is you need forms of virtualization, like Linux namespaces, so that's one solution. Or you need ad hoc solutions, so callbacks from the programmer telling you, look, I'm going to store the TID in this particular global variable, so readjust that. Or you need other forms of virtualization, and this already happens. So for instance, you can use strong typing to solve this problem. So if you have, a PID T type, and we have it, and a TID T type, our framework could automatically detect, okay, that's a TT type. By the way, in the old version, this particular variable pointed to TID1, and this corresponds to TID2 in the new version, so remap that. So it's a tricky problem, of course, but checkpoint and restart solutions also have to deal with this, and that's where the Linux namespace solution actually comes from. So we're sort of trying to pick back on whatever these guys have been doing for the past few years.
So the second question was, your example here, for example, did you have to recompile Nginx, or is this just the same version that you had before?
No, you had to recompile it. So we're not even trying to, not compile or go with the binaries or anything like that whatsoever, because basically our framework and our instrumentation relies on that. So once you generate essentially all the information, like the metadata information, you have to actually apply the compiler-based instrumentation. So you have to recompile it. Well, technically, you only have to relink it, but.
Thanks. So, to follow up on your comment about the lab, so Cristiano will be in the lab next door after this. So if you want to sit down with them and wrap up some programs and this tool and try it out on your own environments, we have VMs you can start up. You can do it on your laptops if you have Linux on it, et cetera. So you're welcome to come over and try it out at the lab.
Follow-up on the PID question is,
right.
What about files like that have the PID, like var run?
Right. So, yeah, there's also an issue. It's a good question. There's also an issue with external state, right? So one thing we don't deal with explicitly, so our framework only understands in-memory state, right? So another extension to that question might be, what if you're using a database? And there are, this database migration needed because you're changing, you know, the tables, your relational tables. So yeah, this is basically not part of what our framework does. So you can envision extensions. There's actually a lot of research on, you know, what happens to persistent state, but this is out of the scope for us in this moment. The way we deal with it, it's simply, you know, we support callbacks so that on a per application basis, the user can register callbacks and say, by the way, also adjust that particular persistent state. Of course, it's not much help because you still have to do it manually, but that's how we do it. And that's how we do it for these applications as well. Hopefully, the effort is not too great, but I wouldn't do it for, you know, database migration. That's all another story.
Hey, have you talked to any vendors who are ready to or able to incorporate this into their upgrade processes?
Not really, but you know, we would like to. So if, cool. if possible. So yeah, the state of all this is not, you know, exactly production ready. I cannot release it tomorrow. But as you can see, you know, it, we have a demo. You know, we have a long to-do list for things that we have to fix, including, you know, documentation, bug fixing, performance optimization before releasing this. But yeah, that would be.
Looks like an awesome concept.
Okay, thanks.